This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Sweet, okay, let's get into it then. Welcome everybody to another episode of Cinematica Animalia, a podcast where we look at somebody's favourite movie, monster, alien, creature, bug, parasite, fully grown mosquito having sex with a woman in a tent. We're never going to look at that movie. We're never looking at that movie.
I have no idea what film you're referencing.
Oh, it's just called like Mosquitoes or something. It's just, it's horrible. I'll probably cut that out. Don't worry about it. Today we are looking at the physiology of Pikachu with the release of the Pikachu Detective or Detective Pikachu movie. We looked at the ecology of the world of Pokemon, a horrifying Riddick, Chronicles of Riddick-like world last week. So you can go back and have a listen to that if you would like. But before we get into that, my name is Sam Perrin. I run ecologyforthemasses.com and I am also a PhD candidate at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. With me today is co-host number two, Davet, shortened to Dave for the purposes of this podcast. Our veterinarian friend from Canada, Adam, is taking a day off today, recuperating from what I'm sure has been a week-long binge after successfully becoming a PhD candidate.
Nice.
You snarky fuzzball.
Pika.
Watch it.
Hold on, wait a second. You can understand him?
Well, of course I can. Because I'm Batman. Well, apparently the only ones who can are me and the kid from Jurassic World.
Pika, pika.
What is he saying?
Just detective stuff. He also sounds exactly like Deadpool, which is really weird.
What's so weird about sounding like Deadpool?
Because Deadpool is nothing like Pikachu.
So look, without any further ado, short episode this week, let's just get straight into the physiology of the main character of Detective Pikachu, Justice Smith, a regular human.
Yeah,
Dave,
no.
Do you have any issues with Justice Smith's physiology?
No.
Well then, I guess we'll just have to focus on the side character of Pikachu for this one.
Ah, okay, cool.
Yeah. Do you have anything for that?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So I did a lot of reading on Pikachu. He is an incredibly well-loved character with a huge fan base. There have been multiple people that have attempted to take a crack at his physiology. A number of different artists, a number of different people using, I don't want to say a rudimentary understanding of science, but like some basic attempts to put some really interesting stuff together.
Dave sent me a diagram drawn of Pikachu, which says number 25, so I'm assuming it was like of a series of different Pokemon.
That's Pikachu's number. He's number 25.
Yeah, but it said number 25, so I'm assuming that they had done the rest of them beforehand?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Now, I have to say, that looks horrifying.
It does. It looks absolutely
really quite
horrifying.
Yeah, we'll put it up on Twitter when this comes out, but my God, it's just ghastly.
I did find a lot of material of people trying to explore, like, how would Pikachu work in the real world? And there's a whole bunch of different misunderstandings and different ideas. Hopefully we'll be able to get into much of them today. But the three big areas that I'm going to focus on are going to be Pikachu's electrical attacks, Pikachu's evolution, and Pikachu's incredibly fast movement. Which are sort of the three characteristic parts of Pikachu. So to start with, just kind of a general overview for people that might or might not be familiar with Pikachu's sort of general setup. Pikachu starts as Pichu, that's his first evolutionary level, and is leveled up with high friendship and evolves into Pikachu. And then eventually will evolve into Raichu if exposed to the Thunderstone.
Now, obviously, in the context of the Pokemon games, movies, all that sort of stuff, evolution is kind of this thing that an individual an individual goes through. It's quite closely related to, it looks like, just life history stages, basically.
Yeah.
Metamorphoses into different animals. Evolution is a very loose term for it here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the right term, and we'll talk about that. And, I mean, Pikachu is a short, chubby rodent. He's covered with yellow fur. He's got two horizontal brown stripes on his back, small mouth, long pointed ears, black tip. He is able to shoot large bolts of lightning. There does appear to be sexual dimorphism in that the females have a V-shaped notch at the end of their tail, which apparently is supposed to look like a heart. They are quadruped when they're running. Pikachu is a vegetarian species in that the Pikachu's in the wild forest for forage for berries.
Herbivorous is the word you're looking for there.
The what?
Herbivorous is the word.
Right, herbivore. Yes, would be the word I was looking for.
Vegetarians. Just rabid Pikachus roaming your whole food store for tofu and bean sprouts.
They're making a decision to save the planet, Sam. Don't judge them.
They're sustainable leaders. What can I say?
They forage for berries in the wild, which they roast with electricity to make them tender. And apparently they charge themselves up while sleeping overnight with electricity. So, all right, this is all the stuff from the comics, or from the show and the lore and everything like that. And I'm going to tear most of that down. Because as we go through the big things we're going to have to talk about, I'm almost positive that Pikachu is going to be a carnivore, or at least omnivorous.
Really? Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, he's not going to be able to shoot any sort of lightning bolt from him. So the most common example of the animal that everybody throws up when they're talking about Pikachu is the electric eel. And electric eels are capable of generating some form of electrical current using a really unique cell type, something called electrocytes, which in the simplest of terms act like a battery. In terms of batteries or cells often work by stacking plates of different charges on top of each other. And then by generating electricity through them, you can actually build up a greater amount of charge. Which can in turn allow you to generate the kind of electrical activity that you need to sort of shock something. So they have these flat disc-like cells. They've got thousands of these cells, the electric eel, and they're each capable of producing around 0.5 volts or 0.15 volts. And when all combined, they can start to generate some serious electric charge. Now, there's still so much that we don't fully understand about electric eels. And there are still huge gaps in our knowledge into how they do this, but their main predatory behavior is that they're swimming along in the water. They are able to start to generate charges that allow them to detect and find prey, and that when the prey get close enough, they're actually able to generate charges out through the water, which cause minor tetany, so animals starting to contract and having a lot more difficulty moving through the water. And then once the electric eel gets there, they're able to actually grab their prey. They actually turn their body on itself so that their mouth is on one side of their prey and then their tail or part of their tail meets the other to complete an electrical charge going through the animal. And then once that animal is sufficiently paralyzed, so basically they just shock it with a mild charge up until it uses up enough of the energy resources in its muscles to sort of tire it out and exhaust it, and then they eat it. They're not cooking it, they're not shocking it. I mean, they're producing a charge, which is allowing them to do something. But as an electric eel, you wouldn't really want to be generating a lightning bolt in the water with yourself.
No. It sounds more or less a lot like electrofishing.
Exactly. That's exactly. Yeah, okay. And so, I mean, there are multiple parts of their electrical sensory abilities. They have a really cool mechanism that I'm not going to get into that allows them to time their charges. And the coolest thing, in my opinion, about electric eels is that we still don't completely understand how they don't shock themselves. So when they're generating this type of charge that kind of emanates out, and they do have multiple organs where these electrocyte cells are found, that allow them to generate these different areas of charge and different polarity. Hence why they form a negative and positive charge on their head and tail, which they use to complete the circuit when they bite something. Okay. There's still a lot we don't understand. Now, getting to sort of Pikachu and just doing a quick reality check, it is fucking hard to shoot a lightning bolt through the air. And it's almost impossible to do it with any form of accuracy. The police officer that tases you does not walk up with a lightning gun and blast you. We have to physically attach something to generate enough of an electrical charge. To generate a lightning bolt, it takes about a billion joules of energy.
So we're also saying what Storm does in the X-Men movies is also probably completely...
physically impossible, unless Storm's secret is that she has no mutant abilities whatsoever. She just carries around a whole bunch of metal lightning rods and waits until there's like a storm in the area and wanders around just hucking them at people.
Fair enough. Would you say then that Electro in the Spider-Man movie was a more realistic representation, where he's just like shooting bolts of lightning with no real kind of care for what he's doing?
I have no idea what movie that you're referring to.
The Amazing Spider-Man 2, your favorite movie ever.
No idea what movie you're talking about.
It's Dave's favorite movie.
So in terms of the electrical attacks, there's no way that Pikachu's going to be able to throw lightning through the air or summon down electrical charges or redirect that much electricity. He'd fry himself. He doesn't have that kind of capability. It'd be way too energy expensive. However, can he internally generate an electrical charge similar to an electric eel? And then when he makes contact with something, basically shock them to a degree or put them into a state of muscle tetany, similar to what happens when somebody hits you with a taser and you kind of seizure, for lack of a better word. It's not a seizure, but I think he could. He's not going to be able to emanate the electric field. So electric eels have a conducting medium of water around them that allows them to send out an electric charge. So he's not really going to be able to detect anything, and he's not really going to be able to send out any form of electricity. But if he comes in direct contact with you, most likely by biting you, then yeah, he's going to be able to move the charge. And I think similar to an electric eel, the Pikachu is fairly flexible. I think he's going to attempt to flex his body around you and touch the other side of you with his tail in order to complete a circuit that runs through him into you and then out the other side, which is going to allow him to sort of shock you repeatedly, tire you out with the muscle tetany, and then eat you.
If it's just like biting or touching, that sort of thing, then it could certainly be a defensive mechanism, right? But if the entire point of the whole thing is that you have to bite and then wrap yourself around something.
Yeah.
That's aggression. That's like
100%. And I
predatory
tried,
behavior, yeah.
Yeah, I tried looking at this mechanism. He can generate a mild charge that might shock animals if they come up. So I'm not completely ruling out that he could be herbivorous. But from an evolutionary perspective of why you would go to all the trouble of generating this ability that allows you to build up, because the electric eel also has to build up this charge. It's not something that they're necessarily walking around with this charge at all times. That suggests more like preemptive behavior, like you're setting up, like you've noticed Adam in the wild and the Pikachu is running in to like make its kill.
Yeah. How large an animal do you think you'd be able to take down?
So I think they're going to hunt in packs. I mean, you guys could get more into the evolution, but I think that's why it discusses that Pikachus in the wild, there's multiple of them. So I think that they're going to be able to hit bigger targets by basically you're going to have multiple Pikachus latched on, and it's going to be the equivalent of somebody hitting you with multiple tasers from different areas.
Okay. So kind of like the way cheetahs take down a wildebeest.
Yeah. I mean, almost piranhas kind of thing. Like multiple ones hitting you from different angles and then just completely, overwhelming you.
Okay, yeah.
So I think that's going to be their easiest mechanism. They're definitely not going to be cooking berries with it.
No.
But yeah.
That would make little sense.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, I think that they're going to hunt. I think that's going to be the easiest thing to do.
The other answer is that they've got, they live in, you know, because you know how things like fire can stimulate seed germination?
Yeah.
In some plants. Potentially have electricity generating seed germination in some plants, but I mean, doesn't really make much sense.
No, it doesn't really make any sense. So yeah, unfortunately, our cute little Pikachu is most likely going to be hunting things.
Yep.
And they're not going to be as powerful, I think, as an electric eel because they don't have a water conductive mechanism. But I think that's going to be the other key thing, is that it's going to be the saliva and the fluid within their mouth that's going to help to increase the conductibility when they bite onto something to help to move the charge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. So that is my first step in terms of my electrical conductivity. The second was going to be evolution. So the Pichu to the Pikachu to the Raichu. And I'm sure that you and Sam talked about this last week. This is an evolution.
Yeah, we spoke about the concept of evolution in general,
right.
How the metamorphoses. We kind of assume that in this world, it's just a growth thing. Like, there's no
100%
actual cocoon going on. Yeah. But I gather that you want to talk about the concept of cocoons, right?
No, not at all. In terms of, like, we've talked about metamorphosis in the Gremlins episode pretty well. I think we did a pretty decent discussion of the fact that, you know, generally speaking, large vertebrates, this is a terrible idea because you'd have to melt and remodel bone. And you're not going to do that to change your body plan. No. I think much more likely is just going to be that Pikachu is growing. So basically starting off as that Pichu, growing into that Pikachu, and then eventually developing. Now, I just did some readings and some sort of discussions over to get an idea. It takes a long time for different animals to grow. An elephant takes approximately 10 years to get to its full size, starting off from the beginning. And something like a giraffe takes like 4 years to develop into sort of like the full size.
Yeah.
So would it be possible for these animals to grow and for the Pichus to develop? Yeah, they're not going to be instantaneous, because that's what we're seeing, right? Where, like,
it really just looks like a juvenile,
exactly,
and an adult form.
Yeah, so I mean, they may have rapid periods. So I think what's likely is that they're experiencing growth spurts, and we're seeing these periods where, over the course of, you know, a couple of months to a couple of years, they experience rapid change and development that's associated with their features. And basically leading to new traits until they find themselves into an adult form. They're not going to evolve because of friendship. They're not going to evolve because of exposure to a thunderstone, unless it has minerals and materials that they need for proper development. All that you're going to see is just growth. It's most likely going to be a hormonal trigger. And the only other thing that I wanted to talk about is just sort of a brief side note, is that there's only one other mechanism that can allow really, really rapid alteration of tissue. And that's something like a retrovirus. If you end up giving something that basically goes in, connects to your DNA, and rapidly alters your body plan, because remember, all of us, our DNA actually contains a plan that says Sam is supposed to look like this, as terrifying as that is.
Someone fucked up.
Yeah. That as a result, if Sam nicks his finger or hurts himself or does damage in an area, his body is able to rebuild him according to what his correct body plan is. And it's also what was able to build him originally from his embryo state according to what his body plan should be. So, I mean, access to some sort of rapid virus might cause these types of changes, but that would suggest that the rare candies are actually something built by some sort of evil corporation that you're giving to your creatures to horribly mutate and rotate them into new forms, which I don't think is what's happening here.
No, yeah. The concept, however, of being able to control growth spurts, like an animal being able to control growth spurts, is really good. Like being able to slow down your metabolism for long periods of time, as opposed to that being, you know, just a response to the lack of food. Like actually, I mean, you know, slightly milder forms of torpor or hibernation, as opposed just not requiring that much activity. That's a really interesting ecological concept. However, I just think this is normal life history progression. And as we said last week, for the majority of the Pokemon, just from a superficial point of view, it makes total sense. They just look like kind of adult versions of the smaller ones,
and
with exceptions.
Right, and I mean, we see this all the time. I mean, baby ducks or baby geese do not look anything like the adults that they develop into.
Exactly,
there's a huge change that goes on, and I think that makes total sense, just to say that people have misunderstood this in their world, and they've equated this to something that it's not.
Yeah.
And then the last thing that I wanted to talk about in regards to the Pikachu were the quick movements, because that's kind of Pikachu's standard thing, is his quick attacks or his volt tackles, where you kind of see him like zipping across the screen almost like he's teleporting, or he's capable of doing these rapid attacks at top speed, kind of feeding into his electrical background. So interestingly enough, super swift movements are possible within the field of physiology. They're known by two names, the first of which is maximal capacity. So that's kind of the fastest that you can get a certain muscle group to move. And the second is something called ballistic movements. Ballistic movements are responsible for some of the fastest contractions or movements that we see within the animal kingdom. The biggest one being the bullet shrimp, that sort of moves so fast underwater that it actually creates bubbles of air that it uses to shock its prey, in a really cool system if you ever get a chance.
The bullet shrimp?
Mm-hmm. Or pistol shrimp, sorry.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When you say like the shrimp itself moves that fast, it's...
It does. So it's claw.
But that's a species of mantis shrimp, is it?
I don't actually know what its evolutionary path looks like.
Pistol shrimp, hang on. Alphaidae.
So, I mean, while...
It looks a lot like a mantis shrimp.
Okay. I mean, the main idea is just it's creating such a quick movement while underwater that it actually shifts the water out of place, creates a bubble of air, and then that bubble of air... it creates a superheated area that's enough to actually create a shockwave that shocks the prey that it's after.
Yeah.
There's also a species of ant, which is the fastest moving ant on the planet, that when being chased by a predator or being chased by something actually contracts its front mandible and contracts it so quickly that it's able to push the entire ant back a couple of feet. Mm-hmm. In terms of these rapid, fast movements...
Yeah.
The main concept behind a ballistic movement is a muscle contraction that exhibits sort of a maximum velocity or acceleration over a very short period of time. So it's like a super high firing rate, high force production, and you get this really brief contraction. You cannot sustain these. These are not something that you can do on a regular basis. And they usually involve something called elastic storage. So actually having tendons or other groups that are attached to the muscles that you can kind of build up energy within, such that you can have a large release of kinetic energy all at once that allows you to do these types of things or move this quickly. So humans actually have their own form of ballistic movements that can be seen. These are generally speaking kind of like quick strike movements. You might see them in reflex situations where suddenly, you know, something hits you and you kind of punch out in that direction. That's kind of an equivalent of a ballistic movement. Something that you can't do on a very frequent basis, but something that happens very rapidly all at once that you can use in a protective capacity. So, theoretically, Pikachu is going to be capable of these ballistic movements. He's probably going to have reinforced muscles and tendons that are in place in his limbs and his tail, which are going to allow him to strike in very quick capabilities, or potentially move into the right position if he's shocking things. He's not going to be able to jump or hop at these incredible high speeds, because that would probably just involve moving way too much of him. He's more likely going to be having these for sort of defensive or attack movements that he's capable of. And so it's not impossible that he might have that quick strike ability where he's able to sort of deliver multiple hits or able to lash out very quickly and hit something. But he's not going to be moving all the time at top speed, teleporting in and out nonstop. It's going to be way too energetically costly, and he's not going to have the ability to recharge at any point. Those are kind of my three big points for our cute little yellow friend.
There's so much other stuff to go into here, though. The size of his legs are not conducive to... If he is a predator, then the leg size is terrible. The tail structure alone...
is awful. In terms of the bending back and forth, it makes absolutely no sense. His ears are not properly shaped for actually hearing sound in terms of what he'd be using them for. They need to be much wider. Yeah, the eyes I can actually get away with depending on when he hunts and what sort of like environment that he exists in. Mm-hmm. I could justify having these large, cute eyes, and depending if he has been domesticated, then pushing sort of these infantile features totally makes sense. That's the reason why we think that our dogs and our cats have those big eyes. As we've discussed
talked about
before,
the domestication of the fox before.
But yeah, you bring up a great point, and I wasn't going to talk about it, but yeah, his limbs are way too small. He would have to be standing if he was capable. I mean, he looks like a domesticated wiener dog. I mean, like, he looks like he would drag along the ground as he ran. He would need major alterations to allow him to actually properly work within the environment that he's said to. And there's a reference at one point in one of the materials that I was reading that says that he climbs trees, or wild Pikachu climb trees. They're not properly designed for it. Just adding digits onto the front limbs does not give you the ability to climb a tree, as anyone that's ever had a little kid, like a four-year-old, walk over and try to climb a tree will tell you. It's not going to help you here. Pikachu would have to look drastically different. Longer limbs, his tail would be straight, it would not be this curved design. There's no reason for that. The ears would be much bigger and wider, and at that point I've generated a dog.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the ideal body plan. That's why we see it referenced in the wolf and the dog. That's why we see it referenced in so many other animals that walk on all four limbs.
I mean, you could make some alterations and turn him into a possum as well.
I could make a possum out of him. I could make a badger out of him. I mean, there's a couple of
that
different...
That tail would have to change, though. I mean, it's so stupid, that thing.
No, it's way too long, and the bending makes no sense, and the fact that the female tail has a notch... I don't know.
Shaped like a heart.
Yeah, no. I mean, obviously some animators had fun with this, and obviously Pikachu is a popular character, so I don't want to tear him apart too much for fear of our website getting hacked
and
destroyed.
Kick him down the stairs. Kick that little motherfucker down the stairs.
But, no, he's what we see him do in the films in terms of many of his capabilities, he's not going to be possible of doing those with the body plan that he currently has.
Anyway, there you go. We've torn both the world of Pokemon and Pikachu to shreds now. So if you're a fan of Pokemon, we apologize, but you know, we also know you you don't listen to this podcast for us to, you know, exalt your favorite characters.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Pikachu just sort of has a running commentary over everything that he's doing.
Yeah.
All over. He's kind of, in a way, sort of like a version of Deadpool, that like everyone can see.
Dave, do we want to move on to your PSA for this week then?
Choosing when to spay or neuter your pets was going to be the big one, because it seems to come up on a pretty regular basis. There are a number of different reasons that have come out in the new literature to delay neutering your large male dog in terms of allowing for proper muscle and skeletal development. Leaving testosterone in place for up to like the year mark, it's totally something we can do. And it's also very much dependent on their behavioral traits, because if they start humping things, they may not stop humping things if we neuter them too late. If you leave a behavior to go on for too long, even if we take away the stimulant for it, the behavior oftentimes remains. Now, that being said, there's no reason to delay spay or neutering your cat. There is no reason to delay spay or neutering your small dog. In terms of hitting anywhere around the 6-month mark is totally fine. And yes, for some large breed female dogs, there is justification for delaying your spay time a little bit to try and prevent any urinary incontinence issues sort of down the line. But again, we really want to get animals spayed early on if we can. Less heat cycles means that we decrease their chances of certain types of cancer development, primarily mammary cancers, later in their life. And getting them spayed is a huge thing. We still are dealing with an animal overpopulation discussion, no matter what you hear in terms of, like, we still have way too many cats, way too many dogs at shelters that we put down on a regular basis. And leaving an unspayed animal or an unneutered dog can lead to serious complications later down the line. One of them is prostatitis, or benign prostatitis in male dogs, where their prostate actually gets absolutely enormous and oftentimes becomes infected. And then the other one is something called a pyometra in a female dog, which is actually where after the heat cycle, a bacterial organism invades the uterus and completely fills it with pus and other material. And it's something that needs to be surgically corrected. It's a serious risk, and it's the thing that's most responsible for sepsis or infection within the abdomen that we see most commonly. It's a huge operation. It's a really scary thing to deal with, and it's just not fun for any veterinarian.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, on a slightly horrifying note, we'll sign off today then. Thanks to everybody for listening in today. I hope you've enjoyed our look at the world of Pokemon. We will be back next week with Godzilla King of the Monsters. Finally. We've been building up to this for a long time, obviously, ever since this one started and we did King Kong.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, you can contact us on Twitter. I'm at SamPerrinNTNU. Adam is at HarsikAdam. We're at C_Animalia. For any questions, concerns you've got, requests, we are cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. Our website is cinematicaanimalia.com. And if you want to check out any of the more hardcore ecology stuff that Adam and I do, you can find us at ecologyforthemasses.com. Thanks everyone for tuning in. And as we always say at the end of the episode, the monsters might not be real, but the science sure as hell is.
Bye, guys.
Bye.